WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Warm lamb's tongue in a black truffle vinaigrette with pecorino and a three-minute egg. Fennel-dusted sweetbreads and sweet pea flan. These are just some of the dishes on the menu at Mario Batali's popular upscale Manhattan restaurant, Babbo. But alongside the esoterica are also such simple offerings as spaghetti with 100 tomatoes. That mix sums up Batali's deeply researched approach to Italian cooking, which Italian food fans can enjoy at the three other restaurants he co-owns in the city, or can learn to reproduce at home from watching him on his cooking shows on the Food Network. Although Batali is from an Italian-American family, he didn't specialize in the cuisine until he apprenticed at a little mountainside family-run trattoria near Bologna called La Volta. When he arrived at La Volta, the chef and owner Beta asked him what kinds of pasta he knew how to make.
Spaghetti with lobster and green Thai curry and, you know, this and that. And she looks at me like I'm from another planet. And she says, well, this is how we make our pasta. Do you want to learn? I'm like, well, that's exactly why I'm here. So we started by making what we called 24 eggs worth of pasta, which is an egg per 100 grams of flour, this double zero flour. And we mix it up in the giant well method, and then we knead it by hand. And then instead of running it through a pasta machine, she starts rolling it out with this giant wooden dowel. Well, it turns out that in Emilia-Romagna, there's this beautiful culture of making handmade pasta between a wooden dowel and a wooden board. And in their opinion, the texture that you get from these two more rougher textures is something that allows the pasta to hold the condiment or the sauce a little bit better. And it has a certain mouthfeel to it, which is very important to the Emilia-Romagna culture, the way things actually are perceived on your tongue and in your mouth as you chew them. As opposed to the way that traditionally pasta is made, which is rolled through two metal smooth dowels, which in turn is still a very good thing, but it's a little different, and they roll it, and it becomes a little bit what they call liscio, or more smooth. So we learned how to make this, and I just thought, oh, geez, this is the bomb. I thought it was the coolest thing, and it was something that, you know, I couldn't master in a week. It took me literally 4 or 5 weeks to get it down where I could be trusted to roll out the dough between the rolling pin and the dowel.
Is this how you still make pasta?
At this point, no. Now we make it with an electric machine that has wooden dowels or metal dowels because it just takes so much longer. And right now I have at Babbo, we have two guys who work 50 hours a week each. So that's 100 man or people hours a week just making the noodles for our restaurant that only serves dinner.
So give us an example of a recipe or a dish or an inspiration that you brought back with you from La Volta that you use in your restaurants.
Well, something as simple as what is seemingly as simple as a ragu bolognese, the classic meat sauce, is something I learned there that is easier than pie and yet all based on how you do it. And you take equal weight of ground veal, ground beef, and ground pork, relatively fatty, maybe shoulder pieces, not necessarily loins. And you cook a third of that volume in celery, onions, and carrots, chopped very, very fine in a combination of butter and olive oil until it's very, very soft. Then you add that meat and you cook it until it starts to brown, which seems like a very quick step, but it takes literally an hour to an hour and 20 minutes before it really starts to brown, because what it has to do is exude most of its own fat and then start cooking in that very fat itself. So then you leave the fat in there, then you add first, tomato conserva, which is like our double tomato paste. No canned tomatoes or anything, just the tomato paste. Cook that until it basically dries away. Then you add milk and cook that until it dries away. Then you add white wine and cook that until it dries away. Then you add a little bit of their brodo. The brodo, which was not necessarily like our chicken stock. It would have like one beef bone, one chicken, one onion, one carrot, and two peppercorns. And they would make a broth out of that, which is there for their tortellini eventually. But they would use that to cook. And then you'd allow it to just simmer on just the pilot light itself for 2.5 to 3 hours. And then that's where you got ragu bolognese. And to this day, we make it just like that at all the restaurants.
There's another popular dish at Babbo, beef cheeks. And I've noticed now in New York that you can hardly swing a dead cat without hitting a restaurant that serves beef cheeks.
They have taken New York by storm.
Yeah, what's the allure? Why do I want to eat beef cheeks?
Well, beef cheeks are very succulent. A lot of Americans' misconception with what makes things taste like big or with huge flavor, is that the most tender is often enough, probably the least flavorful. In my opinion, the filet mignon or the tenderloin of beef has very little flavor, but is interesting for many because it's so tender like butter. But the cuts that actually work harder, for example, the shoulder blade or the cheek of the animal, for that much, who's chewing constantly while he's awake, it has develops sinew. And in my opinion, one of the reasons why it tastes so much better or has so much depth of flavor is because so much blood goes to these muscles and it's bringing whatever the animal's eating closer to it. So you get more sense of whatever the animal's food system was. So you get a deeper or more complex flavor with something that's got a lot of muscle and sinew in it. The only trick with that is that cooking something with muscle and sinew is not something you can just throw on the grill. You have to either braise it or slowly cook it in some other way that allows it to become more tender and a little bit more gelatinous is the word that we like to use when we're talking about something with a lot of muscle.
I know a new food that you like to offer in your restaurant is lardo. I don't know if you present it under that name, though. What is lardo?
It depends. Lardo is exactly what it sounds like, but to many people, it sounds better if I call it prosciutto bianco, which just means white prosciutto. And it's basically the fat of the neck, the back of the neck of a pig that has been salted and cured very much like a prosciutto and then hanged to allow it to age and develop flavor and mature and then sliced paper thin and either draped over warm toast or grilled bread or even just on the plate by itself and people just kind of pick it up. It's not something you'd eat a pound or two of, like a, you know, maybe salami or a lunch meat, but it's something that has a very delicate flavor, very reminiscent of some people's favorite meals, particularly in Tuscany, where they have this Lardo della Colonnata, which is aged in these marble caves up above Camaiore.
And I think you've described it as tasting. You can practically taste the last thing the pig was eating, which is not the loveliest thought. But then I understand these pigs that you raise for this eat better than I do most days. What was the last thing these pigs ate?
We have a particularly good relationship with a group called the Vermont Farmers Cooperative, who will basically do whatever we want. They want to bring us an animal that we're happy to serve. So our animals eat organic pretty much throughout their lives. And in the last 6 to 8 weeks of their lives, they eat a diet at least every day enriched with hazelnuts, walnuts, apples, and cream. And in fact, if you taste this lardo, you can not necessarily taste it like a huge flavor, but you can get the scent or the feel of the nuts and the apples without a doubt.
I'm talking with Chef Mario Batali. He is the chef and owner of the popular restaurant Babbo in Manhattan. He has a number of other restaurants in the city. He's also a cookbook author, and he's the host of a number of shows on the Food Network, including Molto Mario and a new show, Mediterranean Mario. Now, when a dish comes back to the kitchen, what do you do? And I've seen sitcoms of chefs of restaurants. I've read about this. I've heard that you all stand around and taste the dish.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, we try to figure out, first of all, are we wrong? Did someone put too much salt in it? Is it radically wrong? Is it look good? Is it the probably main reason why dishes come back is either because it's undercooked or overcooked meat. So, I mean, you know, you take a look at it and you can tell in a fifth of a second, if they ordered it rare and it looks medium well, then, you know, the first thing you do is say, actually, before we even assess it, we say, what do they want? And we start making that. Then we look at the dish and try to figure out whether we're crazy or they're crazy. And, you know, often enough, it's a combination of the two. If it's a question of cooking time, though, it's obviously, you know, when you make 240 dinners a night, the grill guy might make a mistake on the temperature of the lamb rack, so basically, we try to figure out what the problem is. Then we try to convince ourselves that it wasn't our problem, and then we send another one back out.
How hard is it to get a table at one of your restaurants?
Well, the whole reservation thing, and it's quite a scam that's been cooked up by all the phone reservation people for all the restaurants in the city. There's a lot of pressure to get that 8 o'clock table on that Saturday night, and we take reservations exactly 1 month to the day in advance. As a matter of fact, today we were booking for either a Friday or a Saturday, judging from the volume of calls in December, which would be December 7th. We start taking phone calls at 10 o'clock. By 10:20, all of the main seating is filled. And the bulk of the early part of the late seating and the late part of the first seating are filled. By 10:45, there's not a table left in the restaurant, at any of my three restaurants. And that's just because New Yorkers are obsessed with eating out at Saturday night. If you walk in on any night other than Saturday night without a reservation, we have tables in each of our restaurants that are reserved, that are not reserved. They're saved for customers on a walk-in basis. So there's always a chance to get a table. One of the things that I can advise people on in terms of kind of cracking this code or this barrier, if you really want to go to a particular restaurant, try to go a little bit on the off hour. And even without a reservation, if you walk in every night, there are cancellations and no-shows at the last minute from every restaurant, from Danielle to Le Cirque down to, you know, Foutade's Parmesan Palace. And what it means is that there's a flexibility in that the restaurants don't not, we do not want people not to come in. We want them all to come in and have a good time. But there's only so many tables you can reserve. When those people show up, we'd love to have people to come in. And that's why we actually advise them to come on in on a walk-in basis and see if there's an opportunity, because there invariably is.
Where do you go after your restaurant closes or when you're still out on the town to eat?
Well, New York's filled with options to eat after closing, you know, between 12 and 4. There's hundreds, literally hundreds of restaurants. I guess my biggest thing right now is the Korean food, though. The Korean town that we have in New York City is pretty much 24 hours a day. You go up there and they will bring you plate after plate of meat that you grill on your table. They have a little barbecues in the middle of the tables. And then you take the grilled meats and you wrap them in lettuce leaves with all of these different pickled vegetable things they call kimchi, which is kind of spiced and vinegared roots and cabbages that are just absolutely delicious and very much something that I kind of crave after Western food all week. It's absolutely delicious. And it's also really good with beer, which is something that you kind of crave after working a hot night in the kitchen.
Well, Mario Batali, thanks very much for talking with me today. It was fun.
Thanks for having me.
Mario Batali is the chef and co-owner of the restaurants Babo, Po, Lupa, and Otto in Manhattan. He collects some of his favorite recipes in his books Simple Italian Food and the Babo Cookbook. This is Fresh Air.